Hello and welcome to episode the 246th of the internet's one and only podcast about comics. I am your host, Jean-Luc. You are listening to the Comics Podcast. As usual, I am joined by a cast of characters. Alex is here.
Hello, hello, hello.
Hello, Alex. Chad is here.
Howdy.
Hello, Chad. And Emily is here.
Hello.
Hello, Emily. How is everybody doing at this exact moment at 9:11 p.m. Eastern Time on Saturday, the 3rd of April?
Can't say 9:11 on a podcast.
Why not? That's the time. Anyone?
Oh, there's a couple of jokes I got to scrub from this week's episode of Opinions Are Cheap.
About 9/11?
I thought I was funny.
And in your defense, it was.
See, here's the thing. You can repeat them here, and then you don't have to cut them.
I don't remember exactly what they were. We were ranking cartoon characters.
Specifically, like, women cartoon characters, right?
By
like
their ones? By their propensity to commit 9/11? Or?
No, by their attractiveness and or dateability.
You know, I feel like ranking by their propensity to do a 9/11 would be pretty good, though.
I think that would be a funny show. Bit. Yeah.
That sounds like a good bit.
I think we should do that on this show with, like, comic book characters. Like, which one of these would be most likely to commit a 9/11 style event?
That sounds great.
And we all know the answer is Superman. Superman.
What? Because
come on, dude. That's what Zack Snyder made three movies about.
Yeah, but Zack Snyder doesn't doing 9/11. He gets fake Superman. Batman does 9/11 on the regular.
There are kids growing up where Snyder's Superman is the definitive Superman.
Oh.
Do you think kids see those movies?
Yeah.
No.
I don't care.
They're allowed to like the shitty movies. I liked shitty movies when I was a kid. Like Star Wars.
I haven't heard that one, Chad. What's that about?
Nice April Fool's joke, Chad. You're a couple days too late.
We are recording this show on April Fool's, but Chad's going to really edit it, so it's going to be...
Speaking of April Fool's, did you guys see any cool pranks?
Fuck no.
Any good goofs?
Neopets.com announced NeoVision Plus, and it was going to be a subscription service where you could watch Neopets-based programming that included it was a bunch of parodies of, like, popular shows, and in particular, the one that charmed me the most was Spooky Natural Season 41.
All right, that's all right.
What is Spooky Natural about?
It's a parody of Supernatural that had like a bazillion seasons.
Yes, that didn't register.
It really didn't.
I'm 10 years younger than you, okay?
The great thing about Supernatural is like I knew a lot of straight white men who watched that show and thought it was the best, and then I go online and everyone's like, "Yeah, those brothers want to fuck."
that's kind of weird.
Yeah, it's got a different take. Honestly, I'll take it. Why not?
Did you guys know that the very first Omegaverse fanfiction was a real person fanfiction featuring the actors who play the characters in Supernatural?
I hate that I understood every word of that sentence.
The thing is, that's fucked up.
It's a true thing. I learned it on a different podcast.
The closest I've ever come to watching Supernatural is when they did a Scooby-Doo episode, and I haven't seen it yet. I kind of want to see it. Like, it's exciting.
I've never seen any Supernatural.
That surprises me.
It just, like, I tried to watch it one night, and I got kind of bored, so I just stopped, and I never tried it again. I decided to watch Avatar The Last Airbender again, because it was on Netflix, and you know what? Much better decision.
True Blood is better than Supernatural, and I will die on that hill.
I mean, it's hornier.
It is hornier. There's more boobs, and there's more blood, and there's more swearing, and there's more dead vampires, so True Blood is better.
Well, you know what else aired on the same network as Supernatural was Riverdale, because it's over now.
And Riverdale just keeps on going.
Riverdale's the gift that keeps on giving.
Dude, I am pissed off at Alex because we can't talk spoilers about the things that happen in specifically the latest episode of Riverdale.
You guys go ahead. Restored. I will, just message me once you're finished.
I finally catch up on Riverdale, and this is the thanks I get, Alex.
God. Yeah, exactly. Ungrateful. Ungrateful. But Emily, since all these episodes are probably a little fresher on your mind than they are on mine, how are you feeling about this season of Riverdale?
Oh, boy. Well, can we talk about the fact that they faked us out on the possibility of bisexual Reggie, which was really disappointing to me and upsetting?
That was extremely fucked. I remember specifically I was watching that episode with a couple friends, and we were all like, oh, this is going to be awkward because Reggie's like straight, right? And one of my friends goes, no, everyone in this show is bi. And then they did the tease. It's like, oh, okay, maybe you're right. And 5 minutes later, it's like, Kevin comes over and he's like, oh, no, he's completely straight.
Disappointing. Upsetting. I swear that Riverdale is the most homophobic gay show in...
Yeah.
That is on the air right now. It has taken up the mantle that was left behind by Glee and is now the reigning champion of being both gay and homophobic.
Yeah, that moment in the latest episode where Cheryl's mom is like, we have to kill the interloper, and they're all like, well, I guess this is what we're doing now, and they like immediately look at Cheryl's new girlfriend and are like, let's fuck her up.
So disappointing because I absolutely loved Cheryl's new girlfriend, and I was like, I was so into this. Like the moment they were being kind of like, I mean, I say that it was flirty. I don't know if, that was picked up on by, like, the non-lesbians among us.
No, I 100% read it that way, sort of from the start.
Even their very first interaction, I was like, I want them to hook up. And then, like, when they kissed, like, it was such an artfully shot scene with, like, the big stained glass window in the back and, like, the light pouring in. It was beautiful. It was gorgeous. I loved it so much. And then, like, they just had to fuck it up because, like, the homophobia of it all.
They can't let Cheryl have anything nice for some reason.
No.
Not even for a little while.
I took pictures while watching Riverdale earlier today. I took about 4 pictures just of things that Cheryl was wearing.
Well, that's understandable.
Yeah, because she is literally the best character in this show. Like, and always has been, let's be real.
See, I was with you, but she has not been that compelling this season or last.
Well, that's because they're not really letting her do anything.
She's a good character, but I mean, you know, the writers have sort of fucked up since, I think, the cult season.
Oh, absolutely.
And
she's the best character, I say purely hinged on Madeline Petsch as an actress.
Sure, that's
because
fair.
She, like, absolutely chews to bits any scene that she is in.
Yeah. I do specifically think that the Cheryl Tony stuff has been really fucked this season.
I have not liked the Cheryl Tony stuff this season. I have been very exhausted by it.
I think it's like,
and Kevin's cruising.
This Kevin subplot is fucking dog shit.
Largely
because we skip forward 7 years and we're told like, oh yeah, and in this new timeline, not new timeline, but and now like in those 7 years, Kevin decided that he wanted to settle down with Fangs and they were gonna have a life together. It's like, okay, cool, good for Kevin. And then, you know, 3 episodes later, it's like, no, he has a sex addiction and he hasn't been able to suppress it.
Kevin always gets the short end of every narrative stick. Like, they have not managed to give him a single good plot line since this show began.
Yeah, I agree with that.
The only thing that I think they've done good with Kevin is giving me things to, like, fill in the back of what they've actually done, as opposed to, like, actually doing anything worth the shit with his character.
Yeah, I think that, like, the setup for this season was okay, but then it's just not...
Yeah.
The direction that it took was really poor. But this, honestly, I was kind of down on this season a little bit. I mean, I wasn't, like, huge on either of the last 2 seasons. But this latest episode with the prison break...
Oh my god!
Really fucking gassed me up again. With the
Chick and Charles.
Oh yeah! Oh my god, dude! Chick and Charles, the Joker and Harley Quinn of Riverdale.
I honestly actually kind of love it. Like,
oh, I do too. I think they rock.
My favorite interaction in this episode. Well, first, one gripe is that Betty said something about, I don't know why Juniper and Dagwood can't share a cake, and spoken like a true non-twin. Like, yeah. As someone who grew up with a twin sister, let me tell you, they need both cakes, okay? Like, you treat them like an item their entire, like a collective single entity their entire life. Let them have two cakes. But
Betty should check her privilege.
Yeah, exactly. But also, my favorite line in this episode was when Betty tells them that Glenn, or whatever his name is going to be writing his term paper on them. And Chick says, what? Because she says, like, the Cooper family. And he says, what? I don't count? And Charles says, of course you count, babe. Like,
as he's holding a gun to Glenn's head. Yeah, it's great.
So good. Excellent.
The Glenn thing is such a great twist, too, because it's like, they set this character up, and I thought we would just never see him again after the first episode.
I did, too.
But the fact that he's just, like, an awful fucking grad student who, like, just completely unethically has written his dissertation on the girl that he is trying to date.
It's sort of redundant. You could have just stopped it at an awful fucking grad student.
Yeah, that's fair. It's great. I love that. I'm very happy about it. Also, I gotta say, I think that Jughead has been the consistent standout this season. Not individually, but like specifically his arc. And this episode was no different. I kind of really felt bad for him because, you know, Pop's granddaughter, who he's developed a relationship with, and it's one of the, I think, better relationships on the show.
Hard agree. I like them much better than him and Betty.
Oh my god, 100%. Although better. I don't know how they can be together after this when he took psychedelics, and while he was on psychedelics, she handcuffed him to a table and left him there. And then is like shocked when she comes back and it seems that he's like chewed his hand off or something.
Well, I will say,
that is a really fucked up thing to do.
It's a fucked up thing to do. It also strikes me as extremely the reaction of someone who has never done drugs and doesn't understand
yes.
what it is like to be on drugs, because I can only imagine that being handcuffed while you were fucked up is like totally just not good for you.
Sounds terrible.
Emotionally. But also, like, can we talk about the fact that apparently those mushrooms that Jughead bought were $500? I don't know if anyone else here on this podcast is familiar with mushrooms of the psychedelic variety in any sort. But
they usually last like 10 minutes, because that's about how long this is, feels like it's gone on.
That would be a lot of mushrooms. Like a lot of mushrooms. Like an absurd amount of mushrooms. Like, are they dusted with gold? Like, what the fuck is up? Why would you be buying $500 worth of mushrooms? Also, you can't cook them, so she couldn't have made them into a sauce. It would totally, like, render the psilocybin inactive. And also, psychedelic mushrooms taste like total ass. They do not taste good. You would not want to put them on food. There's
See, you
a reason-
don't get it. These are maple mushrooms.
I don't care how much maple is on these sumbitches. Like, they're not gonna taste good because drugs don't taste good. Like, they fuck you up because it is poisoning your body. Like,
they can make edibles taste. I've had some pretty good edibles.
Yeah, but I mean, like, if you have really strong edibles, they still taste a lot like weed. Like,
they taste weed. Awful.
Weed doesn't taste good, but you can, like,
it does not.
If you put a bunch of sugar and butter and stuff in there, like, yep. You can make anything taste good. But, exactly. Like, mushrooms taste bad, and the only way that they can taste even remotely good is usually if you, like, make them into chocolate, which involves adding a bunch of sugar.
Yeah. Well, I think we can leave it there on the Riverdale talk for now, and we'll probably...
We need to text Alex and make sure that he comes back, because he is the heart and soul of the show.
Exactly. And probably in a few months when the season ends, we'll have our usual Yumi and Alex will sit down to do our usual end of season special episode about the Riverdale that was. But I don't know. I feel like there's been a lot of pop culture happenings this week, at least for, you know, as it pertains to our show. One of which is that Emily convinced me to watch an anime. Well, it didn't really take much convincing. I was just really bored. And Emily has been recommending Wonder Egg Priority to Chad for a few weeks now. And I was like, I would like to watch something. I guess I'll try that.
I am absolutely delighted.
And then I watched 5 episodes of Wonder Egg Priority this week.
Emily can still win!
Exactly. I think you're winning. I mean, I think I'm winning because it's a very good show.
I told you so.
Sometimes anime is good.
Emily has good taste.
I think that you most of the time have good taste. I just, by default, assume that anime that people recommend me are bad, because most of the time they are. But Chad, I understand you've also been watching this. What?
I said I want to hear your thoughts. Very excited.
Oh, gotcha. I know that, Chad, you've watched the first 2 episodes, right?
I watched the first episode.
Okay. And I think Alex has also only watched the first episode.
Yeah, I just finished it.
Okay, right, cool.
Before the show.
Gotcha. So, I mean, Emily's seen it all, and I've seen, I guess, the most aside from Emily. I
speak the most Italian. You speak the second most Italian. And Chad and Alex speak the third most Italian.
Exactly. I didn't get that far to get that joke.
No, that was a joke about Inglourious Bastards. Have you seen that movie?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, like 10 years ago when it came out.
Yeah, that's...
Anyway.
No, I am really digging it. I felt like it took a little while to really find its footing.
You feel that way about every anime or manga.
No, I think Evangelion found its footing basically right off the bat. Evangelion is perfect, in my opinion. Also, I haven't seen it since I was in high school, so take that for what it's worth.
You know, I remember a comic that we also, all of us, read in high school and had very high opinions of, and then when we revisited it.
I think that Evangelion holds up probably way better than Why the Last Man. I'm just
100%. Absolutely.
There's no way.
I just thought that was funny.
Yeah, no, that's fair. It definitely takes a while to find its footing, mostly because the first episode introduces a really strong concept, and I like the main character. I don't remember any of their names, so I'm going to refer to them by their, like, visual features.
Okay.
So the girl in the yellow raincoat is right off the bat, like, to me, a very relatable protagonist. But there's a lot of hidden information in the first episode, and there's also a big exposition dump in the first episode.
Mm-hmm.
So the pacing kind of feels all over the place. But there was enough there that I was, like, able to get into it. And then I think by the third episode, when they introduced the kawaii girl, the girl whose last name is Kawaii, I guess, and she always says, I call me that because I'm so cute.
Yeah, I don't think her name is actually Kawaii. I think she just says that it is.
Oh, well, I don't know what her actual name is.
I'm not 100%. I've not actually looked. I suspect that it's not actually her last name. Because, I guess you've watched far enough that maybe, do you know that she used to be an idol?
Yeah, that is okay. In the first episode.
Yeah, that may have been, like, herself. Her idol name, gotcha. is what I guess I assumed. I don't know. I haven't actually looked for certain, so I don't know. But I got the impression that it was her, like, idol moniker or whatever.
That's fair. I didn't even think about that at all.
Yeah.
But at the point where I'm at, honestly, it's just, like, this collection of 4 extremely fucked up young women. And I am into shows about extremely fucked up people with lots of issues. And I mean, obviously, like, there's the whole other aspect of it, which is that they, you know, fight demons and in order to, like, save people's souls, basically, and all that stuff is really good. For the most part, it's a little monster of the week-y, but it feels like it always comes through with, like, a really, really good emotional payoff.
Yeah.
For the characters, so I'm not going to complain about it too much. But yeah, I'm really, really liking it now. I think around episode 3 is when it really, like, kicked into gear for me, and I really started digging it. But Alex and Chad, I also would like to hear what you thought about the first episode, and I don't want to over-talk about it because I might end up spoiling something or giving information away, but I would like to hear what you guys think about it.
Alex, I feel like you haven't talked much. Do you want to go first?
Sure. I saw the first episode, and it was strange, and I'm not sure if I love it, but there's, like not much happened in the first episode, but, like, a lot happened, so it's sort of like I'm not sure where this show is going, and this sort of the two worlds and her saving souls is cool, and I like the main character. I like her design with the two eyes and, like,
she's
her
so
friendship
cute
with that girl, and she's like, I'm ugly and stuff, and the pearl's like, no, you're not. Come on. You're great. And it's like, oh, okay. So I'll definitely be back for episode 2. I'll watch it. Emily gave me her Funimation's account, so I'm gonna.
I gave it to everyone.
I'm gonna keep going.
I'm the Funimation sugar daddy.
I like it. It was very creepy at times. I like the sort of no face laughing thing and those little sort of imps that were running around with the sword with the little.
I love the animation, like the way that, like, the freaky way that the monsters move sometimes, and, like, there's just, I feel like there's a lot of you guys will see this more as you get more into it, but I assume that maybe at least one of you will watch more of it. I know John is, but you know, just you, Alex and Chad, but, like, the animation and the way that they portray, like, these monster characters is just so interesting to look at, and it makes for really cool fight scenes, and it is really a standout, like, for this season of anime, so to speak, and I'm really excited. I don't know if, I guess none of you have, like, kept up with any information about this, but weirdly, like, because there was delays in the production schedule, there's a recap episode. So if you get to episode 8, honestly, like, you can skip it. I give you permission. I have watched it, and there's really no new info that is given at all, unless you just need a refresh on the story so far. They put a recap episode into this one season anime, try and cover up the fact that there had been production delays, and they did not actually get the last episode done in time. So the final episode, episode 13, unless they're going to be doing a season 2, which I have no idea if it's supposed to wrap up in this last episode, but the 13th episode is not going to air until, like, sometime in July. So,
I'm aware of that. I actually mentioned that, like, a couple hours ago, I think.
Oh.
Because I have anime friends in my writers group. And,
oh, that's fair. Yeah, of all the people,
and they were
on,
like,
the podcast,
oh, just so you know.
You might have heard about that. Well, this gives you plenty of time to catch up.
I have a lot of anime. All of my friends are anime people.
I don't know anything about
except
your friends,
Alex.
John. I didn't know you had any.
Hello.
Sorry.
Alex
that,
is so, my friend.
Yeah, no, I know. That was me being mean.
What I'm probably going to do is wait a bit and watch that anime Alice told me to watch first, and then when this is done, watch this with my brother, because I think he'll dig this too.
Okay.
And so we'll just watch it on the big screen instead of the be on my computer.
Oh yeah, it does, because, like, the art is so gorgeous. I definitely recommend watching it on as big a screen as you can manage.
Oh, I'm watching it on my phone.
I mean, that's, you know, that's also fine.
I'm not actually watching it on my phone. But.
I do.
I'm not David Lynch. I don't care if you're watching it on your phone.
I did really like the first episode. It does. It hits a lot of buttons for me that are just good buttons to hit. It's weird. It's surreal. There's a lot of horror elements to it. The characters are very, like, kind of tragic right off the bat, but in a way that is interesting instead of, like, being kind of tryhard. It reminded me a bit of like Ergo Proxy, which also. It completely different genre of anime, but just the structure of it, like, you watch the first, like, 10 episodes, you're like, I still don't really know what's going on. I get that the characters are here in this world, don't know why the world's fucked up, don't know why the characters are fucked up, but I'm attached to them, and I hope one day we will get answers. And the payoff comes, but it takes a while. And this, it sounds like we probably get a bit more exposition, a little, and information earlier on than, you know, 16 episodes in or whatever, but I appreciate the setup that it's like, no, we're not going to hold your hand. we're going to throw you into some really strange, strange concepts, and you got to keep up. And I like that it trusts me to do that, because anime does not always do that.
It, you know, it's almost like I saw this and knew that you would like it, which is why I was trying to get you to watch it.
Yeah, I guess. If you want to keep playing that card until it becomes annoying.
It's not already annoying? I still have room to go?
Yeah, you can do it twice, two more times.
Okay, great. I'll keep that in mind. Keep that in my back pocket.
What have I done?
You know what else I watched today because of people on this podcast?
What? Did you watch Godzilla vs. Kong?
I did!
What did you think about Godzilla vs. Kong?
I literally got out of bed, and this was the first thing I did, was watch Godzilla vs. Kong.
So
this
is nice.
This is the start of my day.
It was among the first things I did as well.
I kind of loved it, because it was really stupid and bad.
Oh, yeah, yes. Alex and I watched it together with, like, I think two or three other people, and just had a total fucking blast. I had a total blast with this movie. It is like just brain damagingly stupid.
I would like to say that I think it is bold and brave of the creators of this movie to open up with a shot for shot remake of the intro to the Shrek film. I think that was inspired.
Wait, fucking what?
Okay, it's not. I'm exaggerating, but like this. The beginning sequence of the movie involves, like, Kong, like, waking up and doing, like, his, like, morning routine or whatever. And it strongly resembles, in my mind, the intro to Shrek.
The moment where he scratches his ass is just a classic Shrek moment.
Apparently, my wife Gwen had heard about this butt scratch moment, and I had not. So I got to go, which, by the way, Gwen kind of begrudgingly watched this with me, or at least was in the room while I was watching it. And when the butt scratch happened, I found out that I was the only one who had not heard about this.
Oh, you gotta go into these movies blind. I went into that blind.
I tried to go in as blind as possible, and I think it paid off, because by as blind as possible, I mean I have not seen any of the three movies preceding this in the chronology. So I actually had a little bit of time trying to piece together some of the things that was going on.
Well, here's the cool thing is half the characters in this movie weren't in those movies either.
That helps. Because I was trying to figure out, like, am I missing something from a previous movie, or is this movie just dumb? And sometimes it was both.
Yeah, I gotta say, love Bernie, the Godzilla truther podcaster. An absolute based king.
Was not prepared for the amount that podcasting would be a part of this film.
Dude, Bernie is the epitome of the dude's rock lifestyle. lives in a shack, takes a job at a major corporation solely so that he can, you know, steal their data for the benefit of his podcast about the big lizard monster. There's a bunch of moments where I think the movie like wants you to laugh at him for being like mildly like autistic or ADHD, but like it just makes him more endearing. And it's great. I love that character so much. And I think, like, for as aggressively dumb as the movie is, it just, like, he is, like, a perfect, like, epitome of the movie. Because the writers, like, wrote this character, I think, to be the butt of a lot of jokes.
Yeah.
But he is just so endearing. Like, I just genuinely loved that guy by the end. And we made a lot of jokes at his expense, to be fair, you know. E-girl and his podcaster boyfriend when Eleven from Stranger Things shows up. But, you know, he's great. He rocks. It's awesome.
The Hollow Earth stuff, because I had no idea what was going on, I also realized that I thought I knew about Hollow Earth Theory, but I did not know about Hollow Earth Theory. I guess for some reason I thought I had like a passing understanding of what that was. And then like when they do the whole like going into the Hollow Earth, I was like, oh, I don't know anything. And I Googled Hollow Earth Theory and was like looking at the Wikipedia page while I'm watching the movie.
Nice. Yeah. The Hollow Earth stuff is really good.
It was really good. The special effects ranged from okay to very bad a lot of the time, yeah. But it was so fun.
Yeah, I had a great time. I don't think the big monkey and the big lizard hit each other enough times, but...
Same.
It, you know, you take what you can get. Mechagodzilla was in it. That was pretty cool.
Was very delighted by the realization that that was Mechagodzilla.
Yep, that was a great...
Really good.
Great reveal. I was a big fan of it. Love the guy who can only orgasm while controlling Mechagodzilla.
He died doing what he loved.
He died doing what he loved.
Truly.
Yep. And good for him.
It was wild that, like, all the silly stuff that happened in the movie, and then, like, they're like, we're gonna have a rematch, or and there's, like, 30 minutes left, and, like, King Kong and Godzilla have only seen each other, like, once, and it's like, okay, how are they gonna finish this? And then, and then they just stare at each other at the end and leave, and it's like, yay!
Wonderful. I really loved the, like, Godzilla-scale axe that... hammer or whatever it is that the King Kong got. And Gwen kept doing a thing where they would make a joke about something that could theoretically happen, like the little girl is signing at King Kong and they're like, LOL, what if he just like starts signing back? And then he starts signing back, and that happened like 3 times.
Yep.
It is
that kind of a movie. It really is that kind of a movie.
It is so dumb that any dumb joke you make about what could possibly happen is what is literally about to happen.
Yep. Again, dudes
rock.
Had a
great time.
Yeah, I had a we had a lot. I think I speak for both Alex and I when I say we had a lot of fun with it.
I had a great time. I will not watch that movie ever again.
Well, yeah, but it was a lot of fun.
I had a great time. It was, well, actually, no, my theater experience for the previous Godzilla was good, too. But not a good movie, so.
I would consider going back and watching the previous movies in this series.
No. The thing is, Kong Skull Island. Awful. Kong Skull Island is okay.
Oh, I have rode on the Kong Skull Island ride in Universal Studios, so that was my one bit of background I had on the plot of these films.
But yeah, definitely do not watch Godzilla 2014, and absolutely do not watch Godzilla King of the Monsters.
Yeah, I remember you didn't like King of the Monsters.
It's like it's like this film, except there's no fun characters, and... There's, like, somehow less fighting, but more monsters in it. It's a very strange movie.
Yeah. That movie is terrible. This one, I don't know. I don't know what to say. It rocks.
It was fun. I had a great time.
Yep. Cool. Well, I think that about does it for our non-comics talk.
So, one last thing. I've been playing Outriders because I'm writing a review.
Except you haven't because the servers don't work.
Yeah, I was planning on playing, like, you know, 10 to 12 hours this weekend, which is a lot, but, you know, I was starting, like, Friday night, and I played a bit on Thursday, and I have tried, and I've only been able to play 2 hours since Thursday, because the servers have just been going over, but, that's okay. It'll be done eventually. Really fun game, and it's, I reached the part now where I'm past the part where, I played the demo with you, Jean-Luc, and there's some cool stuff happening already, and the new enemies and guns and stuff like that I'm enjoying it more than enjoyed it then, and I enjoyed it then. So it's
cool.
I'm excited to actually be.
I want to play that game, but I'm not regretting my decision to not buy it for $60, considering the servers seem to not be working.
Yeah, you can only wait a bit.
Yep. And while I wait, I will read more comic books published by some of our favorite publishers. Such as Beta Ray Bill number 1.
Holy shit. Holy
written
shit.
Written by our boy. I think it's fair to call him, you know, one of the podcast, one of our boys here at the podcast, Daniel Warren Johnson. Not a character that I expected to want to read a comic about, as somebody who is like, you know, I've seen Beta Ray Bill before. I don't know, seems like shitty Thor. And then I saw Daniel Warren Johnson was writing and drawing this, and
I mean,
I was
that's what the
like,
book's about. It's that that Beta Ray Bill
is
shitty Thor.
It's Beta Ray Bill dealing with the fact that he is shitty Thor.
Yeah, it's, I mean, it's like 70% of this book is a huge action scene, and it's like a war, and he's fighting against Flim Flam Flume, which is, anyway, giant dragon, dumb name.
Oh wait, that's really its name?
Yeah, Fin Fang Foom.
Oh, I guess thought that that was a thing that they said, and then, like,
nope.
That's
just
like
a remnant of extremely racist Marvel comics.
Well, I can't be expected to know that.
No, that's, it's fair.
Yeah, so it's mostly a fight scene with, you know, Daniel Warren Johnson art, which is enough for the admission as it is, but then you get, like, this, you know, Beta Ray Bill, who's got a horse face, and he's able to turn into a human, and everyone calls him a horse face, and Thor broke his hammer that was given to him by Odin, and Thor comes in and saves the day and gets all the credit, and man, I really care for this Beta Ray Bill guy. Like,
I like this
find
comic.
Out that, you know, ladies really be shallow. it really do be that way.
Ladies like, love cool Beta Ray Bill.
Well, not really, though.
No, that was
just one lady.
Look, As somebody who's been reading Alan Moore's Swamp Thing, which is extremely horny, the fact that like Sif was like not down to fuck Beta Ray Bill just made me sad. It was like, come on, man, you can fuck the monster.
Disappointing.
Okay.
I was disappointed in Lady Sif when I saw that this like the blurb for this comic involved like him rekindling his romance. I was like, hell yeah, monster fucking. But then like she goes to like go to bed with him, and like I guess she's just not down with the horse face, and it's like, lady, like I'm not down with his horse face either, but I'm not down with like he's just not a character I would want to fuck. So
I would
like,
fuck Beta Ray Bill. I feel so bad for him.
I don't know that that's a good reason to want to fuck somebody.
I don't know if that's a qualifier there. Like, well, I mean, it might be, but it's not. You might have to rethink that. I don't know. But
yeah, I don't know. It is a really, really good scene. It is like a really like tender scene too.
Yeah.
Where she's like, oh, you can't change back to your human form. Oh, fuck. This is really awkward. I don't want to have sex with you anymore. And then he looks in the mirror and he's like, just says,
sad.
He's just like, I'm not blind. And then he leaves his head in his hands and I feel so bad for him.
Yeah, and then he goes on his quest, like at the end of the book is him going on the quest to go see Odin to get this weapon that he thinks is going to make him, you know, fix his life or fix the way he thinks about himself and his self-confidence. And it's like, oh, you're going to go on a self-appreciation journey and we're going to be along for the ride. Oh,
I am so excited for more of this. I expect to like Daniel Warren Johnson books at this point, but this was just like, yep, I am 100% on board for Beta Ray Bill. Going on his journey of self-actualization to get back the Thunderbreaker. Good for him.
This is the best Marvel comic book of the last year already. Look at that.
Quite enjoyed it.
Oh, Chad, did you get around to this?
No, I saw the title and I was like, I think that's Marvel. And I didn't know if Daniel Warren Johnson wrote it, so I will probably go back and read it.
You should read it. Like,
well,
I genuinely liked Daniel Warren Johnson.
No one fucking told me that.
I said it earlier in the week.
I said, you're garbage.
Fair.
No one important told me that.
I'm sorry, Chad. I should have told you. But in fairness, I don't really know much or care about Daniel Warren Johnson except for the fact that you guys say his name a lot.
He wrote that Wonder Woman book we liked a lot last year, Wonder Woman Dead Earth, and he wrote Murder Falcon, which I think was our book of the year in 2018.
Okay, yeah. I remember those names.
2019,
hasn't
I think.
Since Murder Falcon, and I would say he hasn't missed since Extremity, which is the book he wrote before Murder Falcon.
Yeah, Chad and Alex really liked Extremity. I dropped off of it at some point, but since then I think he's been really, really consistent. So glad to see that continue over at Marvel.
Well, and it's nice to see a writer we like at Image go to Marvel and not, you know, be like, oh.
Yeah, not Donny
like,
Cates it up.
It doesn't feel like he's, like adapting to Marvel. Like, he's not adapting his style to Marvel, he's adapting the Marvel characters to his style, right? Like, this is a very Daniel Warren Johnson.
It helps that it seems like he refuses to write anything that he doesn't also draw. Because, like, so much of his of why he excels is in his art. And the fact that he is like able to bring his style, which is not a style you would, you know, tend to see in Marvel and DC books, into Marvel and DC, it like really goes a long way in terms of like the kinds of comics that he wants to write. And, you know, it's like not feeling hamstrung by, you know, editorial's decision to put a house style artist on your book probably goes a long way too. Where you can sort of like, when you don't, you know, when you do everything on your own and you're not like having to like hope that you just get a good collaborator, it probably just works a lot better.
Yeah, I was worried because I remember that. Well, I don't think I even knew because last week I joked that I'm going to read Beta Ray Bill because
I know.
Yeah. And I just, Beta Ray Bill, I've never read anything by it. I have no interest in reading anything with that character. And I think Jean said that Daniel Warren Johnson's on it, which I assumed was just on art. So when I opened up the book, I was like, okay, I'm getting ready for text. But I'm getting ready for pretty art, and it just never happens. So
yeah, it's really good. Yep, this is a really good book. I'm excited, excited to read more of it as it comes out. Another book that I'm, you know, always excited to read more of, this one with a slash S at the end, Batman Catwoman number 4 from another writer with a storied history in the comics podcast, Tom King.
That's a nice way of putting it.
I don't want to. I gotta save the shitting on him for when I talk about the actual comic book, which I'm gonna hold off on for a second because I feel like I would be remiss if I did not mention the first page ad for the Batman Fortnite crossover, 6-issue limited edition crossover event launching on April 20th. Who's excited to go on this journey with me?
I don't think I saw that.
So normally I just skip through like the first few pages of everything, but this one caught my eyes because on the top of the page it said, "The Dark Knight must face Fortnite's greatest heroes in a battle to solve reality's most dangerous mystery." And that really caught my eye. So coming later this year, this month, Batman 0 Point. Anyway, we can talk about the Tom King comic now. I assume we all read this. Did anyone think it didn't suck?
Yeah,
we
so Batman
are
this
back
week.
From some.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Fucking hell! Oh. I was just trying to like let the listeners know there were technical difficulties, but go ahead.
The technical difficulty Jean-Luc's talking about is Batman, Catwoman number 4 by Tom King and Clayford Manford.
You know what? I fucking hated this comic, and I think I'm done. I don't think I can take it anymore. And the scene that we're really There's some
Jean-Luc, this is our suicide pact. How dare you back up?
Yeah, I'm
See,
sorry, dude.
There's some probably more valid critiques of this book, but the scene where the cat attacked and killed the penguin, I was like, no,
that
I'm
was
fucking
the best part.
Done. I'm fucking done with this. I don't need to see two types of cute animals that I like going at each other like that. I don't like it. I don't want to read it anymore. Tom, like, this is just really, like, this is, like, really, you know, I just want to, like, get a screen cap of that shit and post it on Twitter and at Tom King be like, hey bro, you cut yourself on that edge? Because that's what it fucking feels like. Oh my god.
I have to add this one to doesthedogdie.com, except it's a penguin.
Does also, the penguin live?
I feel like my issue with this comic is that like the shtick where I don't know what's going on isn't fun anymore. I'm just confused and frustrated.
It's yep. been 4 issues, Chad.
And covering half the page with Christmas song lyrics. Awful. It's April.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Maybe if this had come out in December, I would have been okay.
Or,
with it.
You know, the stylistic choice to do that and, you know, set a mood, all that stuff. If the rest of the book was coherent and there was, you know, things that I was interested in. But, like, I've read 4 issues of this book and I kind of get what's going on, but not really. And there's no, like, the thing is that even if I know somewhat what's going on, like, in the story, this isn't like a. It feels like I'm reading, like my knowledge is like a Wikipedia, you know, article, as opposed to, like, actually, like, hey, this is telling a story, and, like, yeah, interesting things happen. I mean, the art by Clay Mann's pretty okay, I guess, but I'll still be reading
the next
issue.
That penguin looked nice.
The problem is that there's, like, not only is it confusing that there are 3 timelines going on, none of them seem to have anything to do with one another. Aside from, like, I guess, like, Catwoman having some relationship with the Joker, like, they're friends or something. But, like, there's nothing really that ties them together. I have no idea what's up with, like, the Phantasm being 150 stories tall on page 7. the bomb under the skating rink, I'm like, don't give a shit, no tension. Batman and Catwoman's daughter, I guess, is here beating people up so that she can find out about her parents, but what is there to know?
I'm not sure where the forward momentum in this book is going. Like, I'm not sure what it is we should be caring about, or like what Tom King is like, oh, they should be caring about this, other than, hey, the Phantasm's in here, and that's from a animated movie you enjoyed as a kid, and I guess, you know, still enjoy now. It's a good film, but like I'm not sure where the hook is, other than like, oh, are Joker and Catwoman friends? What's going on?
See, there's no hook except for the part where Clayface talks about how in the old days we all used to be friends, and I'm like, oh, cool, I want to read that comic. I want to read like a comic about Clayface talking to his villain friends. I don't want to read this comic anymore.
Go read some Silver Age, villain comics, Jean-Luc, where Legion of Doom is getting together and they're all like, oh, we're all in our clubhouse and having fun.
I probably should.
I actually quite enjoy that stuff. That's why I love
this. Probably a better use of time than this dog shit.
Campy and wonderful as it is. But the other thing is like Tom King. He's obviously going with he's made a choice with this series to tell three separate storylines.
Tom King always be making choices.
He makes choices, but most of the time it's clear what he's doing, or like, you know, he's got
a thing
and it's there. Like, okay, like his Strange Adventures book, it's clear he's just like trying to like feel good about like bombing people in the Middle East, and it's like, okay, I understand where you're coming from there. And Mr. Miracle is about his like sort of like uneasiness as a parent and sort of coming back to life after working in the CIA where he, you know, bombed people in the Middle East. And, you know, a lot of nuance with this man. But
is this his Claudio Sanchez book where he's like terrified his wife is having sex with other people? Is that what this is about?
And not just with anyone, right? Like,
His wife is fucking his high school bully or something.
Yeah.
Or his wife is fucking the Iraqi civilian that he like put a bag over his head and drug him to a CIA black site, allegedly.
I don't think Tom King did that, but
he was in the CIA in Iraq.
I don't think that he was the one who was putting the bags on people's heads.
Alex,
he was the guy flying the drone.
What do you think the members of the CIA were doing in Iraq between 2003 and 2009?
Well, they clearly weren't taking lessons.
Every time we talked about fucking Tom King.
They weren't taking lessons on how to write comics because incoherent.
Like, we get it. Fuck Tom King for like every reason imaginable at this point. He's bad at what he does and he probably did bad things. I don't care anymore. I will probably read the next issue of this because I have a problem.
I'll be there for issue 5.
Yeah, I mean, why not, right? Like, at this point, dazzle me. Make it worse. I want to see it get worse.
Do we know how many issues this is? Is this
12?
Oh.
I know, right? Isn't that just sad? Like, I don't know if I'd like, if this was a 6 issue, it'd be great. But man, we're not even halfway through it.
It's funny that Heroes in Crisis got like 9 and it felt like it kind of like, you know,
lasted for 10 years.
Well, yeah, but it also felt like there was more room for them to do stuff and they just never did. And it was like, oh, it's because they only had 9 issues. And it's like, this is going to be 12. So, we'll see how it goes. I'm just excited. This is wrapping up Tom King's Batman run. So we'll get closure, chat. We'll get closure and then we might be able to just completely get out, detox, live our lives.
Until we have to read the Batman Fortnite crossover, apparently.
Oh, yeah, so reading that. Oh,
I mean,
I'd read it.
I wonder who's writing that. Do you know who's writing that, John? I know it was in the thing, but
there is a creative team listed. If you give me 2 seconds, I can tell you. It is written by Christos Gage, art by Riley Brown. So that is the creative team on that. Christos Gage is a name I recognize. But I couldn't tell you why. But yeah, that'll be coming out in a few weeks, and we can read that. I don't know. We'll probably read some better comics in the meantime, like Department of Truth.
Yeah,
came out this week.
Christos Gage. Sorry, his dad is named Nicholas Gage, and it's like that's so close. That's so close.
Are you sure it's not Nicholas Cage?
It looks like a G. It still looks like a G, but. I don't know. Department.
Of Department of Truth number 7.
Truth.
Y'all still enjoying Department of Truth?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm surprised they threw a new character at us. I guess like it is a new arc maybe, but I don't know. It's like it felt like a step back. Hey, we're going to come at the problem from a new angle now. But it was fun. I like the new guy. I like how everybody calls him Doc, but he's not a doctor. Like that kind of stuff is
fun. I thought he was cute. Like just I don't know. He's a sad, paranoid little baby.
Yeah, who got visited by the men in black.
I mean, you know, he's paranoid for a reason.
Yo. Pretty good reason too, as it turns out. And then of course the star-eyed lady shows up, the lady in red, which
yeah, some of that that man in black stuff was actually a little scary. Like, yeah, not that I got scared, but like it was just like that was actually kind of unnerving to read. Like when it like looks at him and like yells, like that was a little freaky to read.
Really cool lettering work there, where it like sort of morphs and it's like sort of spiraling as it's going. And yeah,
I'm always a big fan of horror elements in anything, and this has always had them, you know, kind of from the start, but. The alien stuff, the stalking, and just like the weird supernatural shit going on. You got this kid who's like, I want to deal with the conspiracy theories and jumping kind of headfirst into the deep end and getting way more than he bargained for, I think.
Yeah.
It was really good. It was compelling.
This takes place like in like the 60s, right? This is like right after...
This is right after the JFK assassination.
Yeah, so this is when Lee Harvey's sort of like been there for a little bit. He's been reading a lot. That's sort of the thing going on. Because I think the previous issue was the start of this, because it was also, like, picked up right then. So we're still in the past kind of thing for this arc or whatever it is. But, yeah, I've been enjoying it. Like, I think last time we talked about the issue, I was a little bit like, I enjoyed it, but, like, I kind of want to get back to the present. But I'm down to spend a few more issues exploring this period and then going back.
Yeah, I like this issue a lot. I still am really digging this art style, too. Especially, like... It's definitely more like cartoony than the artist for the first arc was, but I'm glad that is able to translate so well into the horror elements of the comic.
Yeah.
Which I was sort of like not expecting. Well, yeah, I was a little surprised this art style seems to be like a new artist for this arc. I didn't realize that. I thought that it was just a fill-in artist for one issue. But I am really happy that like they were able to pull off that horror side of the comic at the end as well. But I did really dig this. I love that sort of that sequence of pages explaining the men in black. I think it's three pages with a few different encounters, and I just love the like purple coloring on those. I thought they looked really cool, and they had like this really great like vintage feel to them that like sort of captures. I guess like that era of comics, even if it's not like direct, even if it's not like, you know, a direct one-to-one, I love that it's like at least going for that as sort of an homage to, you know, the time and place that the story is taking place in. I think that stuff is really cool. So I really dug this. I love the sky, all the skyscapes too. I thought those were gorgeous. And there's so many pages where like either they're... Or panels that were either focused on the skyscapes or like the sky, they're entirely skyscapes. And they look really, really good. So, really dug this one.
Let's pick up the pace a little bit because I feel like there's a handful more comics and we're getting close to the hour mark.
There's only a couple that I feel like are really worth talking about.
Do we want to hit Shadecraft real quick because it was a number one?
Sure.
Yeah.
And then
I really wanted to like Shadecraft. To be honest,
I wanted to. The dialogue is really bad.
I know. It like endeared itself to me in the first couple pages. I'm like, oh, this is cute. Like, I like the. Like, it sets up this. The first page is like a really good setup page. And then it just gets progressively worse and worse and worse. And where this book really lost me is like, it's a book about high schoolers. And like, in a lot of ways, it feels like it's a book about high schoolers written by somebody who hasn't been to high school in 20 or 30 years. And I don't know how old Joe Henderson is. So maybe he's like 19. But. You know, can't write high schoolers. But the thing that really lost me was that she was constantly talking about how she was attacked by her shadow, like just in front of everybody.
Yeah.
I feel like you wouldn't do that. And it's like a weird nitpicky thing, I think, but it's just like it just really is immersion breaking away. Which is,
I felt like I was being talked down to. Like,
yeah,
like you got your case. You don't know what's going on and why people don't like her and why she's freaking out. Let me say it again. And it was just insufferable. It's one of those things. Like, if you removed half the dialogue in this comic, it'd probably be better for it.
Yeah, it's also weird that, like, because her tackling her friend because, like, she saw the shadow was, like, uploaded to YouTube, and it's like, wait, were they filming her walking in the hallway and then uploaded it? Because that's the only way they could have gotten it.
They did that on purpose. They had, like, one of them had their, like, phone light turned on because they overheard her talking about the shadow. And then they made, like, a shadow on purpose and freaked her out. So they were doing that on purpose.
They tried to go viral. Oh.
Yeah.
Good for them.
There's like a couple good moments in it. And I don't know. There's like I said, there's some stuff I find endearing. But it's just, yeah, on the whole, the dialogue is really, really bad. So
she
talks to herself too much.
I'm probably going to read another issue of this because I want to like it enough that I'm willing to give it a couple more issues, but I was not super impressed with this. I felt like the pacing was kind of weird, and yeah, she talks to herself too much, and there was just something about it that just didn't, like, quite work, and I'm not...
Yeah.
There are parts of it that I can't really, like, put my finger on that I just felt like didn't really work.
I think she just talks too much. Like, I think the same book, let that the might art be carry it, yeah. a bit. Because I think some of the imagery is really strong, especially when you have the shadows and all those sort of the ink wash going on the page and watercolors and everything. Like, I think there's genuinely some strong moments in this book, but it's her talking. I think the artwork is largely strong.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then Two Moons number 2 is the other one I have open right now. The World War II, or Civil War book.
Civil War.
It's a little off at the timeline there.
That's fair.
This is another one where I want to like this more than I do, because I feel like there's cool stuff here, but there's also just stuff that feels contrived. I think some of the dialogue's kind of bad. I feel like they would have just hanged that dude at the beginning, right? Like, I did not buy that they were going to, like, no, we're going to do a proper court-martial. And it's like, no, the before times were very racist.
The now times are also very racist.
Yeah, I kind of like lost my immersion in the first couple pages because I was just like, bullshit. And then he gets conveniently saved, and I don't know.
See, I don't think that that's convenient. I think that's kind of like the machinations working behind the scenes, right? Like, there's, like, obviously a lot more going on here, and we get it teased out this issue even more than we did before with those scenes where he's, like, talking to his ancestors, and there's, like, the galaxy background. We see it a couple times. So there's clearly something more going on, and that's sort of, like, what I chalk that stuff up to is, like, I get that it's still, like, immersion-breaking and not necessarily, like, makes the book a little bit worse. But it kind of works in that way that, like, oh, this is all, like, everything is happening for a reason. That's sort of the sense that I get, at least, is that there's, like, people, like, watching out for him from behind the grave is kind of the sense that I get. The problem for me is, like, I feel like this book, I want to stick with it because I think that the conceit of here's a character who is fighting for the Union in the Civil War. He's Native American, but was raised by white parents after his parents died. And he, you know, there's obviously a long history of the Native Americans being brutalized by white American settlers. But now he's, like, found himself in a conflict to save America, to, like, reunite it. And obviously he has some hang-ups about his heritage, as we see in, like, he says as much in this issue, and I feel like that, like, internal conflict is really compelling of what does he feel he owes these people, and is he maybe wrong about that, or, like, you know, I feel like that stuff is really compelling, but it is, like, very much, like, background in this book. It does not feel like it's center stage, even though it feels like that's what the that's where it's heading, like, thematically, is my sense. But the book doesn't, I don't know, like, these first two issues haven't really been about that. So I want to stick with it for a little bit longer, because I think that there's a really compelling story in here somewhere.
Yeah.
But as is, I think, like, this issue especially has some real pacing issues. Way too much happens in the space of a little bit under 30 pages. And a lot of it feels info dumpy. By the time I got to, like, the fifth plot point, I was like, okay, this book, how is this issue not over? Feel like it's moving a little bit too quickly.
I do think the artwork is a reason to keep coming back to this.
It's fantastic.
There's some fucking gorgeous panels, and I love all the monster designs so far. They're great. Yep. So, I mean, I'm going to be back for issue three largely because there's promise here, and then the artwork is great. And I think I'm hoping with all this info dump stuff out of the way, we can really get into more of a thematic thesis. Like you said, there's clearly good things going on. I just want to dig into it more. And please, God, don't give me more information. I have enough now to understand everything. You know, I'll be fine. I'll be fine. It'll be great.
Yep, absolutely. That's sort of where I'm at on this one as well. I feel like of the books that I read, you know, like, just for the sake of time, Redneck number 30 is maybe the only one that's worth, like, touching on. I missed this one.
I downloaded it today and then did not read it.
So I think, importantly, it confirms that we are now in the last arc of Redneck.
Oh, okay.
Like, the book is ending at the end of this arc, which also won't come out. The rest of it won't come out until the fall, so we have a little bit of a break between now and then. And it feels like it's been a while since the last issue. And honestly, I couldn't entirely remember how much of this issue was recap stuff. Like, I couldn't remember if JD already knew that Greg was a double agent or not. So if you didn't know that, Chad, spoiler, I guess.
Yeah, that
happened in the last issue.
Yeah,
okay, that's what I thought.
Column, it's someone saying that, so unless the person
gotcha.
Is.
That's what I thought had happened. I thought I already knew that, but I wasn't 100% sure. But there's a really good sequence with JD talking to one of the members of the Parliament of Vampires, where he gets really fucking pissed that they used Greg in that way. And that scene is really, really good. It feels like there's some, like, classic redneck stuff in there. While Bartlett is sitting outside sipping a whiskey or something, or a beer. There's some good stuff in there. Honestly, this is definitely, like, an intermediary setup issue for the last arc. And I'm just mostly excited that this book is actually, like, finally reaching its conclusion and wrapping up. I feel like there have been some ups and downs, and now but mostly ups, especially lately. So
yeah,
I'm excited to see this book sort of close out.
For sure.
In a way that feels really natural. Like, it feels like we're at the end of the story.
I'd say there was one rather major event that happened near the end, but I won't spoil it because Chad hasn't seen it yet. But there's a really good line about sort of conviction and sending a message that the villain has, and it's good stuff. I'm excited for the wrap up of A Redneck.
Yeah, me too. Cool. Well, I think that's gonna do it for us, unless there's anything else, any other comics you guys wanted to touch on briefly.
So I picked Silk number one is the Marvel comic to read.
Oh, you did read it.
Oh.
Which I didn't think it was very good. It was like,
yeah,
it was fucking mediocre as hell, and why I'm like, oh, fuck Marvel, I'm not going to read that other one.
Oh, no, Beta.
That is,
you should have read really Beta Ray Bill instead.
Yeah, as it turns out, I made a mistake, because
I made the same choice as you, but we made opposite decisions, and I won. So
yeah, you did.
Congrats, Emily.
Silk number one also has the Shadecraft problem, where it feels like, oh, wow, it's a comic book about millennials written by a fucking boomer, I guess. Like, I don't know who Maureen Gu is. I've never seen her name before, so maybe she's younger. But, like, this is, like, the most faux attempt at, like, relatable 20-something.
It was pretty transparent.
Yeah, it is incredibly cringe. And not, like, in an intentional way.
It sucks, too, because, like, the idea of, like, a superhero kind of, like, getting paid or getting, you know, she got some really expensive clothes for saving that store, right? And it's like, is this ethical? And it's like, this is a question we should explore. I like this. Let's just not do it now that we're done with page three. Let's completely forget any of that and just do wrote's the word, just bullshit.
I cannot find any information on how old Maureen Gu is, but
yeah, I mean, ultimately it doesn't matter. It's just
she looks, if I had to guess, like late 20s or 30s.
Yeah. Well, she does a poor job of representing you, yours and Chad's age group, in my opinion. it's not a very good comic. I don't know. I just think it's weird that, like, Silk is, like, that in this is, she's just, like, very literally, like, female Peter Parker in every way possible, in that she is a journalist, and she works for J. Jonah Jameson, and she's a superhero in her spare time, but she still has to pay the bills.
You know what the problem might be is that she is actually, like, most of her work previous seems to be young adult fiction.
Yep, there's the problem.
And the jump from young adult fiction writer to young adult comic writer is a lot more of a jump than people probably anticipate.
Yeah, also most young adult fiction is fucking terrible anyway, so.
Also, yes.
I like young adult fiction, but yes. I have not read any of hers,
like,
you can
still like it. Like, I'm sure it's likable. Some of it is likable enough, but it sucks.
Yeah, there's definitely a range.
Yes. Cool. I read The Flash number 768. Chad, I can safely say you made the right decision. This shit
sucks. Yeah, I did one good decision.
Hey, there also, was one good part.
Oh, no shit, right?
absolutely.
There was one good part where, anyway, it's dumb. The Flash is race because Barry's going to take Wally's powers away because I don't care because I didn't read it. But then Wally gets back into the past and he's in, like, caveman times. And then he by mistakenly gives the Tyrannosaurus Rex speed powers and they're, like, fighting. And it's like, it's kind of cool. It's kind of cool. And then they talk some more, and then he goes to the future, and the art's really bad, so.
I feel like anything I could have gotten from that scene was probably fulfilled just by watching Kong versus Godzilla. Yeah, I got the names backwards. It was Godzilla versus Kong.
Because it was like the same like feeling of like, they're fighting.
We should wrap up.
Yeah.
Yep, we should. I didn't mean to spend too much time. I just wanted to say The Flash sucked.
Yeah, I like that.
But yeah, I think we're all done here.
Yeah.
Come back next week. We'll talk about some more comics and other stuff.
Maybe if we're lucky, Chad and Alex might watch more Wonder Egg Priority.
We might. So you'll have to come back next time to find out.
Honestly, I probably won't if we're going to have to wait that long on the last episode. I might just wait until it's out.
I mean, could watch an episode a week leading up to when the new episode comes out and be good.
Yeah, I'll see what my brother wants to do, because I do want to watch it with him. I think he'll like it.
You have enough time. There's 12 episodes out. Well, okay, not counting the recap episode. There's 11 episodes out. Like, I feel like it's 10 weeks before the next one. I haven't checked.
The problem with being my friend is you have to put up with my horse shit.
I've been doing it for a while, Chad.
Oh, all right. Well, thank you all for listening, and we'll talk at you again next week. You know the places to find us online if you're interested. And I'll see y'all later.
Oh, there is going to be a bonus episode of this podcast, possibly this upcoming Wednesday, next Wednesday, that me and Emily recorded about Warrior Cats.
Oh, it is really good, guys. Like, I'm not just saying that because it was just me talking at Chad about things that happened in Warrior Cats. Like, it was really fun.
we had a pretty good time. I figured we'd only go for like 40 minutes, so we definitely went for the full hour.
Look, I tried, okay?
There was a lot, as it turns out. Warrior Cats?
We didn't even get through all my notes because I started with an introduction to Warrior Cats as a concept.
So I'm really excited to listen to this.
I got decently sauced on it too, which was fun by the end. And then the other thing, I can't promise my MLP fanfiction yet. I did hit 12,000 words. It's still not done. Maybe next week.
I have to read it.
12,000? It was 5,000 last time I heard.
I have to read it because I told Chad that if he watched some of Wonder Egg Priority, I would read it. So damn. I'm on the hook for that now.
Holy.
Listen, there were specific things I needed to do, and some of them took longer than I thought.
God damn, man.
I write Fluttershy better than the show writes Fluttershy.
That's not hard.
That's going on my urn when I die. I'm not going in the ground. It's too cold. Anyways.
If I'm lucky, then Chad will allow me to do another Warrior Cats episode, because I actually did recaps of the first three books, and we only got through the first book, so...
Jesus Christ.
All right. Goodbye, well, everybody.
We'll talk at y'all later. See Take care.